Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
And I'm Michael Atit, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, December 10th, 2014. The world celebrates Human Rights Day, a low-key event held in Juba.
The nation is tested by its ability to overcome the crisis and to transform it into opportunities. And I see a window of light there, and I think that hero and heroine that are really struggling, hidden, and that make a lot of difference.
And as the one-year anniversary of the conflict in South Sudan looms, observers say human rights violations continue.
The problem, the one of the 15th of December, started as a political disagreement in Juba, but it quickly degenerated to an ethnic conflict.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Today is the Human Rights Day, as designed by the United Nations General Assembly in 1950. This year's theme is Human Rights 365, and it signifies that all people are entitled to their rights every day of the year.
South Sudan human rights advocacy groups say there is little to celebrate given the numerous violations and abuses that have plagued the country over the past year. In what government officials call a low-profile commemoration in Juba, human rights defenders are being challenged to work harder to end abuses. Philip Thonaleu has the story from Juba.
Rights activists say South Sudan has witnessed horrific human rights abuses since the conflict started in Juba on December 15, 2013. They say that is why the theme of today's event, Why Human Rights Every Day, is very appropriate. Today's program was brief. It consists of a panel of four experts offering their views on how to protect the human rights of vulnerable people, especially the women and children of South Sudan. David Dow, the director of Agency for Independent Media, says much still needs to be done. Dow says most citizens are committed to peaceful coexistence, and he believes the people of South Sudan can and will raise above the ethnic differences.
During that crisis, there were men and women that rose above their tribal inclinations, tribal lives, and they crossed the border and saved the lives of the others. It is something positive, but very small. But it also gives us the beginning of reconciliation. I believe in positive outcomes. Despite all the clouds of negativity, there is something positive.
When fighting started a year ago, it largely pinned members of President Salva Kiir's Dinka tribe against the Nuer, the tribal community of rebel leader Riek Machar. Human rights advocacy groups documented ethnically targeted killings and other atrocities since the conflict began, including rape, forced detention, and unexplained disappearances. The nature of the conflict forced hundreds of thousands of citizens to take refuge at UN peacekeeping mission bases throughout South Sudan, and many are still coming there 1 year later. Lauren Corbandi, chairperson of South Sudan Human Rights Commission, which organized today's event, says justice, peace, and reconciliation are interlinked. Corbandi says the proposed formation of a transitional government of national unity is one way to achieve a sustainable peace. But since the warring parties will be the main decision makers in the transitional government under discussion, Corbandi doubts there will be significant progress.
If you are a part of the problem, you cannot be judge of the problem at the same time. If we are genuine South Sudanese, we want peace, the process of management of transition government should not be in the hands of those who take part in the government, to the crisis. Unless we do that, we will not have sustainable peace.
Corbandi says he is not calling for a regime change in Juba. Rather, he believes the South Sudan political leadership should concentrate on restoring the confidence of the people by every means available. Luca Byong, with the University of Juba Center for Peace and Development, says the incidence of human rights abuses in South Sudan is among the highest in the world. Byong says the weaknesses of government institutions is a key barrier to reducing human rights violation. But he says the world's newest nation has an opportunity to change this disturbing trend.
A nation is tested by its ability to overcome a crisis and to transform it into opportunities. And I see a window of lights there, and I see that hero and heroines that are really struggling, hidden, and that are doing a lot of difference.
For BOA News, I am Philip Thonaleu in Juba.
The capital of Jonglei State held its own event marking the World Human Rights Day today in Bor, where officials emphasized the continued suffering of victims from the year-long violence. UNMISS officials say one thing Jonglei State officials can do to improve the human rights situation in its state is to focus on educating children. Jacob Achek has this report for VOA from Bor.
Many of the hundred of Jonglei State citizens attending today's celebration expressing their fervent hope that human rights violation will end, one peace finally return to South Sudan. The Jonglei State's Minister of Cabinet Affairs, Samuel Jong Bang, says acknowledging and protecting human rights is the duty of everyone, including the international community.
The basic rights include the right to live, right for the liberty, rights for the marriage, right for the ownership of property, rights for education and others. In this day, people of South Sudan and Jonglei State particularly, we are celebrating and want to acknowledge that these are important rights which are subjugated by our laws. And the government is working very hard to protect them and to grant for everyone a right so that our citizens live in peace, practice their life the way they want.
Maya Mungong, a member of parliament in Jonglei State Assembly, says if there are people in Jonglei State, human rights exist. He said the diversity of the crowd attending today's celebration is proof that the people of South Sudan can live together in peace.
We thank the UNMISS that they should be with us and always followed the peace being discussed in Addis Ababa, that the people will bring peace among themselves as we are now staying here. We are from different nationalities, and we sit together. That is showing us that we are respecting human rights.
Ngong said although some areas in Jonglei State are still being controlled by anti-government forces, government officials will coordinate separate peace and human rights conference to ensure that peace is achieved in the state. UNMISS Jonglei State's coordinator Adel DeWitt says South Sudan is a young country. Not only it is newest country in the world, but the vast majority of its people are under the age of 30s. For Jonglei State, this means that supporting quality education will be a critical strategy for maintaining peace and reducing human rights abuse.
I would want for us all, in particular the government, to rededicate our interest in the interest of education for South Sudan, in the interest for education for the girl child, in the interest for young girls to be able to complete their education before being considered for marriage.
The word said all young children must be able to access school and complete their educations and Adiban in order to lead South Sudan into the 22nd century. Jonglei State officials said they will commit themselves to restoring peace in the state so that each and every citizen can feel that their right will not be abused. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
The latest round of peace talks between the government of Sudan and rebel groups from Darfur, southern Kordofan and Blue Nile State has fallen apart. The African Union High Implementation Panel in Addis Ababa say the talks have been suspended indefinitely. Just 3 weeks after they began in the Ethiopian capital, the talks were aimed at ending more than a decade of fighting in Darfur and more than 3 years of fighting in the other two areas. The head of the AU panel says the government delegation refused to discuss issues of governance and constitutional reform in Sudan and insisted that the talks should be strictly on achieving a secession of hostilities agreement. One of the rebels' chief negotiators at the talks, Mindy Minnawi, says the sticking point in the talks has always been the rebels' demand to address what they say is Sudan's real problem, how the country should be ruled, and the government's insistence that the rebels should lay down their arms. He says the government is practically calling on them to surrender, even though the nearly daily bombardments by the government forces continue. The government and rebels of the Sudan People's Liberation Army North, or SPLA North, have traded accusations in recent days of starting hostilities in southern Kordofan. Sudan Defense Minister Abdurrahim Hussein threatened yesterday that the government will crush all rebellion in the country. The main opposition party, Umma Party, and a coalition of other political parties in Sudan signed an agreement last week to work with the rebels to bring peace and change the regime in Sudan. They say the government is not serious about engaging in a dialogue that could transform Sudan into a democracy. Two of the signatories to the agreement were arrested after their return to Khartoum and are still in detention. A third signatory, Sadiq al-Mahdi of the Umma Party, is in self-exile.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a closer look at the one-year-long conflict in South Sudan.
South Sudan In Focus listeners can find us on the following shortwave frequencies: 11900, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan In Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
tell us about your favorite comedian.
Mr. Bean is my favorite comedian. I started watching Mr. Bean at a very young age, way back. And that was the first comedian that I saw on TV. That's why I developed that love for that guy. He was very funny, very funny.
Basket Moon, This Is the Right Person, and for this one called Golden. Those are the best for you. I used to listen sometime when I'm stressed or I need to have some fun.
My favorite comedian is Can See Me. She know what she's doing, and I like the way that she's acting.
I don't even have, I don't like such things. I don't like comedies, so that I can't say that these comedians, no.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Now, as part of our series leading up to the one-year anniversary of the start of the conflict in South Sudan, we look at how the violence quickly took on an ethnic aspect and included extreme acts of sexual violence. The government of South Sudan continues, however, to insist that the conflict is a political row between President Salva Kiir and his former vice president, Riek Machar. At a meeting of the UN Human Rights Council in September, South Sudanese Justice Minister Paulino Wanawila Unango said as much. But former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo publicly disagreed with him. Obasanjo, who is head of an African Union Commission of Inquiry investigating human rights abuses in South Sudan, told the right councils,
"Yes, the problem, the recent problem, the one of the 15th of December, started as a political disagreement in Juba, but it quickly degenerated to an ethnic conflict."
Ordinary South Sudanese citizens have been saying since last December that they were attacked in Juba in the days immediately following the start of the conflict. Many said they believe they were targeted because of their ethnicity. Soon after the uprising began, the violence spread to Jonglei, Upper Nile and Unity States, where ethnic killings reportedly happened on a much larger scale, as government troops and rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar fought for territory in the three states.
We documented a number of human rights violations, such as targeted killings of civilians, destruction of civilian property, looting of humanitarian aid.
That's Elizabeth Deng, a South Sudan researcher at Amnesty International in Nairobi, Kenya. In April, hundreds of civilians were killed in Bantu when rebels loyal to Machar captured the town. The United Nations quickly blamed the rebels for the killings, in which civilians were killed in places of worship, in their sick beds, and their homes. The White House called the attacks in Bantu an abomination. Spokesman Jay Carney described, quote, "Stacks of bodies found dead inside a mosque, patients murdered at a hospital, and dozens more shot and killed in the streets and at a church, apparently due to their ethnicity and nationality, while hate speech was broadcast on local radio," end quote. Days after the Bantu attacks, the United Nations Protection of Civilians site in Bor was attacked by an armed mob that forced its way into the camp and opened fire on civilians sheltering inside the base. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon condemned the attack as a war crime. South Sudan policy analyst Akshaya Kumar called it,
"It's truly disturbing because it's an echo of the ways in which the two rebel factions fought against each other for so long during the civil war. But it seems like that echo has now been amplified, particularly with resort to the use of gender-based and sexual violence, the kind of really brutal rapes that we've seen in the past year."
In October, the UN's top official on sexual violence in conflict, Zainab Bangura, said after a visit to South Sudan that women and children have been bearing the brunt of the fighting. Bangura said what she heard and saw in South Sudan was some of the worst violence she has seen in her 30-year career.
"Survivors feel like they have no one to turn to report the crimes that are committed against them. The character of sexual violence crimes is shocking. In the words of one woman activist I spoke to, it is not just about rape. It is to inflict unimaginable pain and destruction."
Elizabeth Deng also addressed the unspeakable nature of gender-based violence during the crisis.
"We documented a number of cases of sexual violence, including gang rape, brutal acts such as cutting open pregnant women or raping women with objects like sticks."
Kumar says the atrocities that have been committed in South Sudan are the result of a lack of accountability. She says South Sudanese leaders and army commanders on both sides feel a sense of impunity and have total disregard to human rights and international law.
"The real factor that explains the deterioration of the style and nature of the violence is the true absence of any even remote specter that people will be held to account for the actions that they take. And when people move about in their lives with the sense that they have impunity, when people are attacking other communities and seeing themselves as invincible with no chance of ever being held to justice or to be held to account, then any sort of restrictions on their behavior are removed. And that really explains the way in which violence has shifted and morphed, especially in the past few years."
The United Nations, the United States, and other observers have said that both sides are guilty of committing atrocities. Although an official death toll has never been released for the conflict, UN officials said early on that at least 10,000 people have been killed. Another 2 million have been displaced by the conflict, many seeking shelter in UN camps because they fear they will be targeted for their ethnicity.
Civil society groups agreed that the atrocity that has been committed in South Sudan have met the task of getting the country's many ethnic communities to forgive, forget, and coexist more difficult. in the following report about the impact of the year-long conflict in the lives of South Sudanese, VOA fellow Lucy Pony tells us that some South Sudanese say the conflict has opened up old wounds.
The Reverend Bernard Sua has been the Secretary General of the Committee for National Healing, Peace and Reconciliation in South Sudan since last year. He says committee members have been consulting women, young people and academics from different parts of the country to see how they can lower tensions between communities. Sua says South Sudan needed national healing and reconciliation even before the conflict. Now, he says, it needs to address other issues as well.
There's no doubt that South Sudanese are heading to reconciliation, but of course there are other deeper issues that relate to justice and the issue of forgiveness, accountability. So all of those are things that need to be taken into perspective even as we move to the issue of reconciliation in this country.
Sua says communities are more divided than ever because of the conflict. Revenge killings are likely to occur more often, even if South Sudan sets down the path of reconciliation, he says. He says South Sudanese need to be patient.
The death and the cope of anger and the division runs so deep. I mean, we are talking of 30, 40 years of how people have been divided, how the level of mistrust, the suspicion, and the fragmentation. That this is a process, it's a journey, and therefore it's not something that you want to accomplish tomorrow, or the expectations of the people genuinely, they have sat up for so long, so they want to see some of these things put behind them.
David Didao is the executive director for the Agency for Independent Media and the spokesperson for the South Sudan Civil Society Alliance. He says the conflict has deepened divisions in South Sudan.
My good friends who are actually coming from the other part of the community are no longer talking to me because they're suspicious. They think that because this gentleman comes from this other tribe, that at least we know him as a good person. We don't know what he's thinking of, what his relatives might have told him, what he is actually thinking at the moment. So it has actually tear apart the social fabric of our society.
Dao says the country has seen many historical injustices and atrocities starting during the long liberation struggle. He says South Sudanese need to forgive each other for these past injustices, but more than that, the country's leadership needs to lead the way and start holding the perpetrators of atrocities accountable.
The most important thing is how to address issues of justice and accountability, because it is not the first time that such atrocities are happening in South Sudan, and if this goes without addressing issues of accountability, then the grudge will continue for a long time.
Sua says true reconciliation will have to wait until after the current conflict is over. He says the country's leaders need to resolve their differences and create an environment in which dialogue, forgiveness, justice and reconciliation are all possible.
Reconciliation is building a relationship. It is about creating space for people to begin to listen to one another, people to begin to dialogue with each other so that some of our pain, some of our losses can be shared together. Because at the end of the day, all of us have been victims of the war in this country.
Don Bosco Malesh is a civil society activist. He says the parties to the conflict have to be ready to accept responsibility for atrocities committed.
For genuine reconciliation to happen, there must be one party that is willing to accept responsibility and say, I did this, I'm sorry. And there should be another party that is willing to say, fine, let's forgive one another and move on. But if parties are stuck with their egos and kind of always trying to push responsibility on the other, are not willing to accept mistakes, not willing to say sorry, it will make the process a bit complicated.
Malesh says reconciliation needs to be a top priority for the entire country.
It must involve all stakeholders. We have seen very horrendous things which happen to people. We have seen people who own property in their own towns are not able to stay in their own establishment. They have to go and stay in a UN protection. And staying there for the last 12 months or so cannot just be erased in an event or say, let's have a reconciliation and then that reconciliation, we think it's over. No, It will demand the first coming together, confidence building, trust building will take long, but it is possible.
Malech says there need to be reforms in the structure of government so that it reflects the diversity of South Sudan and pushes the country towards unity and development. And he says it's high time, after a year of fighting for South Sudan's leaders,
to show leadership. Time has come for them to end this conflict. The call is that we should be able to end this conflict and end it for once, once forever. We don't want to get it open up all the wounds. So it demands a genuine process of reconciliation, a genuine process of acknowledging what have happened in the past and really pull our societies together and we move on and build this young country.
For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Washington.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Nabil. Two champions of children's rights, Pakistani education activist Malala Yousafzai and Indian child rights advocate Kailash Satyarthi, have received the Nobel Peace Prize in Oslo, Norway, making history as the youngest laureate and the first India-born winner. 17-year-old Malala said at the ceremony she represents young people around the world who lack access to schooling. The teenager recovered after being shot in the head by the Taliban in 2012 for her activism. In an interview with VOA just before the ceremony, Malala said the Peace Prize is a victory for Pakistan as well. Two explosions have rocked a marketplace in Nigeria's second-largest city, Kano. Initial reports say two female suicide bombers set off the blast this afternoon at the Kanton Kwari market. At least four people are reported dead, with several others injured. Militant group Boko Haram is suspected in a string of attacks around Kano, including a deadly attack on Kano's central mosque late last month. And finally, former Polish President Kwasniewski says Poland let the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency run a secret prison on its territory, but he says Polish officials did not authorize harsh treatment or torture of the suspected terrorists at the site. In an interview today with the Warsaw radio station, Mr. Kwasniewski said he urged then-U.S. President George W. Bush to end all U.S. intelligence efforts at the prison more than 10 years ago. Mr. Kwasniewski said the efforts were halted at some point. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We leave you now with the song Sitia Loss by a young Ugandan musician, Eddie Kenzo. We have been listening to Eddie Kenzo with Sitia Loss. My name is Michael Atit in Washington.
And I'm Nabil Biaja, also in Washington. Thanks for listening. We hope you can stop by again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan Focus from the Voice of America.